This podcast is brought to you by LMU Munich.
Hello, Tuki here. Nice to see you all again. Thank you for having me. I'm very pleased to be here today, and I'm going to talk about the characterization and color within the representation of the sleep in the Iliad. My main research has been color or light in antiquity in the past few years. So this time I tried to add sleep in it. So it has been quite new for me, it was quite enjoyable. If you have any comments or suggestions, would be very much appreciated. Compared to Ailey's fantastic paper, I think mine is going to particularly one tiny puzzle to fix the Iliad in this paper, rather than covering all the good research sources. And basically my slide is about Greek citations, so if you need to look up these parts. And the handout is just a reference to a directive which I researched this time. And from Plutarch's Moralia, we can assume that even in antiquity, it had already been acknowledged that a deep sleep, a long journey, and a kind of distraction and extinction of the body and the soul could represent death, as you can see on the slide. And I use a translation from all loyal classical dictionary and for former OCT and Hammond translation. And it seems the symbol or representation of sleep itself cannot always be entirely positive, but rather profoundly dark and negative indeed. In fact, what the princess during the story of Sleeping Beauty did is almost exactly what Plutarch states above. That is, she falls into a deep, deep sleep as he is dead, which destroys every single function in the castle. And everyone also sleeps. It is a kind of long journey for years and years until a prince appears to wake her up. It is a kind of long journey for the prince too. A better example can be found in the Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. Juliet falls asleep after drinking a majestic potion in order to bewitch her beloved Romeo. And Juliet temporarily pretended to be dead intentionally. The message explaining the true situation unfortunately does not reach Romeo, who only learns her death, which devastated him so greatly that he decided that he can't live up with her, so he kills himself eventually. Later, Juliet wakes up and finds Romeo dead beside her, which saddened her so much that, again, she killed herself. So the tragedy arises from the way sleep obscures the true circumstances and creates misunderstanding through mystification. Even Homer knows that too much sleep has a negative effect upon us, would you say, book 15, 394. Sleep itself in general is invisible and only lets characters asleep, silently maybe. Nonetheless, the inaction of characters who are asleep is, in fact, a crucial form of action within the story. Thus, I believe the sleep's inactive action is quite important. So, my attention is paid to what sleep does in Homer. As we can see that Hypnos is personalized as a god of Hypnos in the Iliad, I shall focus on the god of sleep this time, who plays an intriguing part within the story. What role does the god of sleep play in the story? He is a twin brother of death in book 16, you can see twice, which discloses one of sleep's absorbing aspects. Taking West's sentence, I quote, from one point of view, death is a kind of sleep. Sleep, the eternal death, the sleep of death, etc., is widely used as a poetic metaphor or euphemism for death, end quote. Mythologically, it seems that sleep is commonly linked with death. Fontana also suggests that, I quote, many cultures regard sleep as a time when the soul leaves the body and travels in other levels of reality, bringing back memories as dreams, end quote. Pointing out night, sleep's mother nukes, her characteristic as a bringer of sleep, dreams and sexual pleasure, and that the mother nukes who has negative aspect is apparently even feared by other gods too. Evidently, sleep itself is closely connected with negative aspects too, including death. In addition to its positive side, since sleep as a journey itself is supposed to soothe us. Hereby, I should like to highlight that sleep has a dual representation, light and darkness, which is connected to his significant role as a string puller or individual invisible controller, whatever. Even Hera signifies when she needs Hypno's help in book 14. I think it's next. Yeah. And sleep, Lord over all gods and women, you have listened to my request before, so this time please listen to my again. So my paper has two parts, Hypno's and Calchaos bonds. After examining those two terms, I combine them in order to delve into the intricate subtle interconnection between color, sound, and motion that the poet skillfully structures in accordance with his planned plot, hopefully providing a new perspective on the spectacles of the Iliadic scenes, specifically concerning the characterization of the god of sleep. My viewpoint on the god of secret glory in the Iliad will be revealed in my conclusion. So Hypnos with a Y capitalized occurs 10 times at 46 instances in the total in the Iliad, plus Hypnoontas once. The reference you could see in my handout is an adjective in there. Guru Keros, Guru Kos, and Hedus, Liantos, Meriflon, etc., etc. Then they all convey a positive sense of Hypnos. Sweet, for example. Only possibly Pandamator sounds slightly overbearing or intimidating. Calchaos is puzzling and definitely different from other adjectives, which is why I'd like to focus on later. And looking at the context where Hypnos is located, I think there are five keys to consider. Okay. And number one, sleep is to be given by God to ease your stress, to reduce your fatigue, and indirectly to give you your pleasure, followed by sexual intercourse. Examples there on the slide two. In book 24, Hermes shed sleep over Priam, his fellow men, and sleep comes over Zeus in book 114. Basically, Zeus is sleeping with Hera. And obviously, sleep is one of the delightful things to do, as Menelaus mentioned that men would in book 13636. Sleep is supposedly enjoyable too. Priam wishes to enjoy sleeping at last after his unbearably difficult time in book 24. Also, sleep is a benison, like a gift to be given, book 7 and 9 and book 9 too. Which implies that Hypnos has a strong power and can control. Number two, sleep is to be stolen, i.e. woken up, deprived, or made to disappear. Then Diomedes suddenly wakes up because of Nestor's instruction in book 10. Sleep releases his hold from Agamemnon in book 2, it's three times. Sleeps for dogs and guards is gone in book 10. And number three, sometimes it is impossible to sleep. Zeus cannot sleep in book 2 because he is pondering how he could bring honor to Achilles. And Agamemnon also can't sleep in book 10 twice, and Menelaus, Hermes either. If you think too much, you are worried and sleep does not visit you. At the beginning of the book 24, Achilles cannot sleep, even though all the other men enjoy their sweet sleep. So sleep is supposed to be able to conquer all. Here the poet is Pandamator, but cannot conquer Achilles. Achilles' distinctive position is emphasized here. His sorrow for the loss of Patroclus is too extreme to sleep, unlike the other men. Number four, sleep is unbreakable. Particularly if you are falling into a deep, deep sleep, your sleep might be everlasting, i.e. very close to death. This is linked to the commonly acknowledged notion of the symbolical connection between sleep and death, as seen above. Thus, sleep implies a sense of darkness too. In particular, the negative sense here is metaphorically well presented by the phrase blonde sleep in book 11-241, which I discussed right below. Number five, sleep is a messenger. Sleep delivers a message to Poseidon in book 14. And while Zeus is sleeping with Hera, whose plan is being successful, Hypnos runs Beta Tain to inform the news to Poseidon. A striking odd paradox exists here. Zeus is asleep without motion, Atremas, which means sleep is functioning in the way that sleep in general should be, i.e. motionless. On the other hand, Hypnos, the god of sleep, is physically moving in order to carry out his mission. So whereas sleep is functioning as actionless as sleep should be, the god of sleep is physically in action. So action or and actionless sleep are elaborately balanced, which conveys that sleep itself can affect the storyline even when mortals or immortals sleep motionlessly. Also, in book 16, Zeus tells Apollo to take Sarpedon's dead body away from the battlefield. Then sleep and death bring Sarpedon's dead body as requested. The dead Sarpedon is brought to his homeland for a proper funeral. It might show their obedient tendency to the upper Olympian god, but let us rephrase this. The Olympian gods need their help. This is a famous vase, and the Sarpedon is taken away. And he also, how the poet presents the sleep god here should be noted for my later discussion. Hypnos is described as one of the messengers, Pomposin, and that comes with Cryponosin, swift, and the messenger can set fast. The sleep god can move swiftly and work as a mediator between two locations. Sarpedon is dead, i.e. in unbreakable sleep without motion, then the sleep god actually moves fast. Again, here it is odd sort of a paradoxical balance here. One is inactively asleep, and the other is physically active. One of the two who is in action is the sleep god. So, Hypnos indeed has mystifying characteristic. One of his major actions in the Iliad is involved with Hera's cunning plan, starting from book 14, 153-45, the problem was known. Then later, Hera visits Hephaestus, then the plan is set in motion. There is an important corner of the plot of the Iliad because Hera successfully deceives Zeus, which affects the progress of the war. There, a gentle, soft sleep also takes an essential part, enticing Zeus to sleep. Let us see the how the sleep god respond to Hera's favor in book 14. Yeah. The god of sleep, accepting Hera's favor, requests one of the graces in return. In order to confirm the promise, Hera is asked to swear an oath by the river of Styx, touching on the earth with one hand and the gleaming sea around Marmion with the other. If you ever break an oath that you have sworn by the river Styx, you will be punished. So Hypnos is devising a diplomatic strategy here. And Polyboteron are all nourishing, and Marmion are gleaming, enhance the vividness of the scene. Because of Hypnos' help, Hera successfully manages to seduce Zeus and distract his attention from the battlefield to Hera herself. Hera's plan is very sneaky or cunning, and the sleep god is a great help for her. At first glance, it looks like the sleep god does what Hera tells him to do, but while allowing Hera success, he manipulates her into promising to give him what he wants in return. And that has an enormous effect upon mortals. As narrated in the Iliad, the god of sleep is in fact the controller of mortals. Examining Hypnos thoroughly so far, clearly sleep is more powerful than it appears in the story. Also, the god does not show himself on the front stage very often. The storyline is crucially affected by its action. So, in what way, then, bronze sleep, I'd like to move on. As seen above, among the adjectives that describe Hypnos, bronze, Kalkeos, is only one color term or metal. The phrase Kalkeon Hypnon in the Iliad book 11-241 is particularly intriguing to examine the characterization of Hypnos. Bronze and sleep, the combination doesn't sound normal, at least to me. Is bronze a color or a light? At least it does have many hues according to the right and angles, and it shines brightly, as Aristotle also admits in the Corollibus 793. Even Homer sometimes found sky bronze, Polycarpus, and Owen suggests that the common epithet of the sky, such as Kalkeos as Deus, might be referenced to blueness. Busata's recent work is instructive for the color perception. I quote, "In the epic narrative, the sky can be called iron or bronze, but it is never blue. Gladstone concludes that the visual organ was not fully developed at the time of Homer and that the archaic Greeks' eyes were still more sensitive to the light than the color and unable to clearly distinguish both one from the other and the different colors. So Gladstone is a well-known scholar in his book 1858, and he is the one who said Homer is a colorblind. And also, Vivante's suggestion on the metal is not worthy, I quote, if color in the thing in things implies a sense of their substance, the reverse is also true. Material implies color. Homer may not have any specific words for brown, yellow, or gray, but when he says bronze, golden, silver, he also implies the respective colors, end quote. So whatever bronze is a color or not, its luster is existence and should contain a significant grossing impact to attract us. Constantinido claims, I quote again, in epic thought then, bronze seems to possess a vital power, through its vision and sound, end quote. So I would therefore like to explore not only the visual but also the oral effect within which we can extract from the context where bronze is presented, then consider how the metal can be associated with hypnosis. So we start with a strip of bronze, and I just colored to make it as colorful as possible. And if we damask for the strip, koimesato into karuke hypnon. In short, if we damask dies, we found henceforth the commentators regard the bronze as hard and unbreakable. If the sleep is not to be broken, it certainly indicates an everlasting sleep, which is death. However, the metaphorical use of bronze and its delicate relation with the distinctive features of hypnosis is more to be sought for the convincing enough elucidation of the characterization of the sleep god, I think. So according to Joseph Addison, who said colors speak all languages, I believe that. So I think it actually implies more than we could possibly imagine. What kind of implication does bronze possibly have? In fact, karukeos, karukos, and other karuko compound words occur relatively frequently one after another in the Iliad. So I have divided them into two tables, which you have on your hand, our appendix 112. And quite a lot of happening there. So this metal is even used for the religious architecture, divine places of residence, for example, for Zeus' bronze floor house, or Hephaestus' house of star-like bronze, Tartarus where the threshold is bronze in Book 8. Further, it is used as an epithet for Ares and Hephaestus too. So hereby, the importance of bronze that is associated with divinity can be apprehended without difficulty. And obviously, bronze-related terms mostly display warrior's armor, which is not very surprising at all. If we think of bronze as a color in general, it is usually dark and hard, I think, but can shine brightly sometimes. So as you can see on the handout, some color or gleaming-related terms are also used for as a decoration for the calcareous of bronze. So it has a smooth, gleaming surface reflecting light upon the armor, hence the light flashing from the bronze would provide fearful impressions on the battlefield. I say appearance with a gleaming armor in Book 7, for instance. Stanford rightly claims, I quote, light was a supremely divine and beautiful element of nature for the Greeks, end quote. So Stanford offers an inspiring point that crescendo and diminuendo of light and darkness imagery can be skillfully orchestrated within the language of the play, as keeping the unity by tying up its parts such as night and morning, noon and morning, which suggests the essential aura or visual effect within the story that I should like to argue later. So let us see more presentations of shining glitter from the bronze. A striking view from Book 2. So countless pieces of bronze armor shines on the green gods, even the heaven. This is a spectacular view with bright walls, and the brilliance on the surface of bronze is illustrated and even lighted to the sky. According to Card, I quote, the gleam and flash of polished bronze are recurrent image in the Iliad, a symbol of martial power and blow, end quote. The brightness of bronze alarmingly strengthens the image that war is coming. And somehow, bronze is also associated with celestial power. For example, Hector's appearance in Book 11 is narrated as a deadly star, and his entire body shines with bronze like the lightning of Zeus, which implies terror or something sinister. And his gleaming appearance in Book 12 is even more terrifying indeed. I think 22 is coming. The glare is so frightening that the Achaeans run in panic and then seizing dim rises later. Also, Achilles' shining appearance in Book 2 is even more terrifying. Achilles is likened to the bright star in Orion's Sirius, which supposedly conveys an evil sign. And Achilles, shining brightly like a star, hastened towards Epsomenon, towards his enemy. So there are again bright terms in Saxon's paraphernal Estelle, Aurai, Phenomenon. I made the slide as clever as possible. And this glitter comes from the stars and the bronze and the motion caused by the star, and Achilles are elaborately paralleled, I think. The brightness is even elevated with the following narration in the same book, 130-35. And it is the very final or climax of Achilles' battle against Hector, and the brightness is intensified to the maximum level. Achilles' strength is emphasized by those success bright charms, Calcaeus, Elemental, Algae, Pyros, Elemental, Helen, all. Hector trembles when she Achilles and runs in terror, then Achilles chases Hector. It appears that bronze's brightness on the surface designates dark sides of aspect, fear or alarm, in which its metaphorical use can be connected with death or i.e. hardly broken. The implication of the metal bronze that is too hard to break could be reasonably accepted. Thus, sleep of bronze is a fair expression for death, as it is a sort of journey of no return once you embark on it. It reminds of us of the hard metal magical chain which Hephaestus created in Odyssey Book 8, aiming to capture the embarrassing moment of his wife Aphrodite and Ares trying to entangle them so strongly that the lovers cannot escape from the chain. The firmness of the impossibility and the impossibility of breaking asunder has some connection with the metal, including bronze or its hardness, no doubt. Therefore, the association of bronze with death, in which sleep itself connotes, is illustrated, specifically so in the glare reflected by the bronze. The warrior's armor moves as they move on the battlefield, not only the shining light generated by the bronze, but also the sound of its crashes can be horrifying. So far, I have deliberately bypassed examples in which Calico-related terms are involved with sound in the context, which I believe are profoundly vital to unveil the poet's sophisticated skill in composing his story. What is beginning, and more importantly, what should be approached is the interconnection between the color bronze and its sound and motion. So I'd like to see the sound part. And some recent studies suggest that we not only read, but also gaze at the epic, like watching films. The visual effect with careful presentation is essential to make the story as interesting as possible. And furthermore, the sound effect with picturesque expressions that resonate with the context is also essential to excite audiences. The sound of clashes of bronze against bronze on the battlefield stimulates us with a visual and auditory imagery. I should like to discuss how the poet maneuvers his words for sound effect using Calico-related terms. First of all, the scary sound of Diomedes' bronze in Book 4, and the bronze rang fearfully on the chest of the king as he lived on the movement. So the Calico's rings vibrate, and Deinos emphasize how terrifying the sound is. The formula explains of the bronze ringing around the chest, calcareous epistaxis, which is often enough to be noticed. Aias sealed also rings out loudly in book 7. And the sound of bronze seems increasingly bordering peri excellent, and even more ghastly sounds appear in the stage with deathly things as the story proceeds, like Stanford's saying that crescent or whatsoever. And in book 14, even though Hector is not dead yet, but sprinkling of the auditory related terms and leaving the spectacular view more dramatically, I think, in this scene. So Hector does not die here, as long as Zeus promised to honor Achilles last. The symbol of the ox crashes very effectively like a gar, right? And in order to emphasize how fearful the battle sounds. One of the other remarkable bronze-related expressions in Homer is when a voice is described as bronze in book 5 and 8, twice. And so in book 5, Hera, disguised as Stentor, whose voice is bronze, encourages men to fight. So those men are spurred by Hera's words, so the bronze voice actually works very well, or perhaps passive enough to frighten men too. The idea of bronze voice is noticeable, and the Stentonian voice had already been proverbial in Aristotle, according to this. In book 18, Achilles shouting is described as bronze, and this is probably continued from the previous symbol of a trumpet in 290-212. Achilles' voice is so frightening that the Trojans' hearts are shaking in terror. Whatever bronze means here, color of a light, the bronzed voice metaphorically presents a mighty, terrifying, dark sense. Interestingly, characters who are associated with having a bronze voice are on the Achaean side. One more striking expression of bronze is bronze sky. The warriors keep fighting fiercely over Patroclus' body in book 17. This spectacular view in which the iron dim Sidereos Oriumargodos goes up through the air to the bronze sky amazes us. Iron tumult, which is supposed to be very hard, bronze sky, which is also must be undestroyably hard, and barren air, which sounds desolate or unproductive, enforce the image of chaotic battle visually and orally. Rather provocatively, when Achilles is about to fight, the earth even smiles in a gleam of bronze in book 19. And the black picture is brilliantly entangled with sound effect, and this is precisely like watching a film. The warrior's armor flashes like lightning. The earth thunders beneath their marching feet. The combination of light and sound, i.e. lightning and thunder, works out splendidly. The laugh, growl of the earth enhances the brightness of the gleaming from bronze. The extraordinary brightness of Achilles' new armor is intensified by the various metals and the glare from its surface. Achilles, a main character, is distinguished with those metaphorical presentations of bronze here too, along with the sound tone, as seen above in the beginning of book 24, where sleep cannot control only Achilles. In book 21, his outstanding position with the divine armor is even more emphasized with the symbol of black eagle. And Achilles runs swiftly that way, likened to a black eagle, Aieto and Merinos. And which moved the fastest and strongest. Consequently, on his chest, the bronze crashes. The sounds resonate marvelously, corner wisdom and crash of the sound, portraying his intimidating figure as a warrior, Smeldalion, which means fearful, and old man's gone, loud noise within. Then Achilles greedily resonates with frightening rebound sound too. Agenor's spear fit Achilles' greed but cannot get through it, so rebounds, which rings out loudly. Then bronze against bronze makes the table sound. Although the volume and level of fearful sound gradually soared towards the climax, like the music crescendo, the hard metal bronze does not only reflect light, but also is resonant with the sound of crashes, which is associated with dark, deathly phase of the furious battle, and also demonstrates a tough or indestructible characteristic of the bronze. The very last conspicuous presentation with which bronze and sleep could possibly connect is related to the bird in Book 14. This is narrated within the process of Hera's mission. The sleep god stops before Zeus notices him, climbs up to the pine tree and sits there, hiding Peplocus Menos, in the shape of a bird. The bird is called Tarukis by God, but Cumindus by men. This greatly helps us pin down a perhaps slight but clear linkage between bronze and sleep, which reminds us of the peculiar phrase of Calicus Hypnos at Book 11, 241. I should like to propose that Calicus is rather appropriately employed for Hypnos to indicate a warrior's death, conveying the symbolic characters that Hypnos connote, being synchronized with one of the characteristics of bronze, i.e. not to be broken. It is fair to relate both Calicus and Hypnos to positive and negative aspects. This elaborate arrangement, combining the unbreakable characteristic of bronze and its reflection of light on the surface, produces image of light and darkness which function efficiently in the context, both visually and orally. The spectacular view reinforces the sleep god's futures, which could be illuminated because Hypnos connotes the dual representation as well. I shall expand my thought about the sleep god's unique characterization a little bit more. Actually, the sleep god moves fast too in order to accomplish his task, just seen above in Book 14. The god of Hypnos cunningly, quickly set his motion in order not to be noticed by Zeus, disguised as a bird and watches, being hidden, which also suggests his quick, silent, invisible action. As a matter of fact, as mentioned above, sleep is not visible and quiet in general. After making sure that Zeus is asleep, the sleep god runs to deliver the news to Poseidon, which turns round to the tide of battle. Concerning together with examples of sleep as a messenger in books 14 or 16 above, the god of sleep is recognized as a fast mover. Moreover, he moves silently. This is precisely how the god of Hypnos plays his significant role, making his action quickly and silently behind the scene while controlling the storyline, even briefly. So my sketch of Hypnos has been perhaps elusive, like the god's mystifying character. Nevertheless, it's what his delicate but great power in the background as grey eminence has been elucidated, along with Hypnos' unseen channel with the metaphorical representation of bronze, upon which bright glow is reflected connotes, rapid movement and shining light, in accordance with the beautiful oral resonation that effectively reinforces the spectacular views and that provokes the audience. It is not completely unrelated to the sleep god's action or law that at all, but rather intimately connected, unfolding both positive and negative senses, light and darkness, life and death, or to be woken up or to be falling into. Among the continuous brutal fight, gleaming flashes on the bronze are brightly shining, terrifyingly, whereas sleep between days provides tranquility on one hand, freedom from stress by emotion, even temporary, and the god of sleep moves swiftly on the other. On the contrary, sleep might produce negative effects, including stress, especially being unable to sleep. The unbreakable firmness of bronze symbolically manifests the dark side of Hypnos, i.e. death. So to conclude, my viewpoint on the interrelation between Hypnos, color, bronze, sound, motion could be summarized as follows. So sleep is to be enjoyed and simultaneously to be feared. Its duality is explicit, and the poet's widespread use of light and dark imagery throughout the story can be appreciated. This dual imagery of hypnosis is not unusual even for us, and I would like to submit three salient features of hypnosis. One, moving quickly, two, soundlessness, number three, invisibility, colorlessness, which demonstrate his power to control the story from behind the scenes. Whereas he appeared to be set aside from the mainstream, that God's ability to drastically change the storyline is indeed vital. Hypnos may be seen as controlled by the superior God, but in fact he controls the story. The cleverness of the personification as sleep that indicate invisible, silent sleepiness represent his subtle, delicate, but true proneness inside the story. As there is a time for many words and there is a time for sleep, or just say book 11379, I think it's time to finish my paper today, following hypnosilent instruction. Thank you.